So my family and I used to live in Nebraska, and there are exactly, as far as I know, two things in Nebraska. The Huskers and the Henry Dorley Zoo. And if you've never been to either, choose the zoo. I like the Huskers. Chris may want to shoot me when she gets back. But the zoo is something unreal. I've been to a lot of different zoos. I've never been to a zoo like this one. One year we went and we paid for tickets, and it cost $70 for our family to go, I think. Or we could buy a season pass for $110, let's say. We opted to just buy the tickets. What a waste. See, the zoo is so big that you can only see about a third of it before you're exhausted and your kids are ready to go home. So the next year, we decided to get a pass. And the pass made it so that we could come and go as we pleased, right? We could come in for a half a day, and we could leave. Every time we went, regardless of how many times we'd been there, there was always one place we went. And the one place we went, if you ever get to go to the zoo, well, I guess there's two things you have to see. You got to see the swamp under the desert. That's just fun, because there's alligators, and alligators are cool. But there's also the lead jungle. If you're there, lead looks like lied. It's not lied, it's lead. And it's an indoor jungle. It feels like it's about the size of Algona. I know it's not, but it's big. And you get to walk around the upper ring of this jungle, and you get to see all sorts of things that you would never, ever, ever see in your life. And there's a couple of things that I always remember. The monkeys, they get to run around near you, sometimes next to you. It's pretty cool. There are these fish that you get to look over. I'm scared of heights, so there's a little bit of me that I had to lean over and look at these fish underneath us, and it terrified me, but they were so cool, I was willing to do it, and I don't even know what they are. It says on the little sign, but I'm pretty sure I can't pronounce it. They look like something that you would take out of prehistoric times and just plop inside the jungle at the Lead Museum. They're 10 feet long, giant. They were always fun to watch. I never could figure out exactly what they were. Look sort of like a hippopotamus mixed with a fish stuck in the water. But then there was one other thing. And see, this thing is really interesting because almost all the trees in there are fake. There's a few real ones, but most of them are fake. And this one thing, it just had one stump that went up with a few branches on it. And this animal was always in the exact same spot every time we went to the museum or the jungle. And it was the sloth, the three-toed sloth. I'd never actually seen a sloth before going to the lead jungle, but it was there. And over the different years that I went to the museum, I never saw it anywhere other than on one branch of that one tree, having never moved. It just laid there. In fact, this tree was on an island that was only about 10 feet wide. There was nowhere for the sloth to go because you know what they knew? The sloth didn't want to go anywhere. It just wanted to lay there and let them use a pole and stick food out near it, and it would lay there and it would grab food and it would eat. And then it would lay there some more, and it would grab some food, and it would eat. And for years, the thing never moved. And I think everybody who goes, they look at it for the first time for a little while, and they say to themselves, there's no way that thing's alive. There's no way. It doesn't move. Everything else is moving and jumping and chirping, and they're fun to watch. And sometimes you get to see little baby monkeys that are really cute. And then the sloth doesn't move. Why would we bring the sloth up? Why do I care, in fact? I care because that's the picture of the antithesis of what we're supposed to be in this passage out of Proverbs. We're going to go to Proverbs chapter 6. We're going to specifically look at verses 6 through 11, but in order to do that, we're going to have to give ourselves a little bit of background. Now, as we've said, the context of Proverbs is almost always nothing, right? It's just proverbial things that are said that don't really connect to each other. And this one, however, we're jumping in the middle of something, and Solomon hasn't started a new thought. He's continuing on with one, but the one that he's continuing on with is just hard to really wrap your brain around. At least it's hard because it's verbiage that we don't normally use. So let's just summarize verses 1 through 5. Do not depend on your neighbor to get you stuff. Do not depend on your neighbor to provide what you need, because what you're going to find is if you strike up a deal with him so that he gives you his stuff, so that you have stuff to use, you're going to find yourself indebted to him. And you're going to be his slave, because if you can't pay it back, he's going to come collecting someday. That's a synopsis of the first 5 verses. And so if you find yourself in that situation, what Solomon says is, go to your neighbor, beg him to let you pay this off and get out from underneath him. And then don't go there again. That's verses 1 through 5. Now, see, that impacts how we understand this passage, because I'll almost guarantee you've heard this passage. But I'll also almost guarantee, at least if you're anything like me in my growing up years, you've heard this passage never having anything to do with the passage that comes before it. You've only heard what this specific set of verses says, not that it ties back into that. So let's read verses 6 through 11 out of chapter 6 in Proverbs. Again, this is Solomon, the king, writing. Then he starts in verse 1. He says, my son, this is again writing to his children, right? Verse 6, go to the ant, O sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise. Without having any chief, officer, or ruler, she prepares her bread in summer and gathers her food in harvest. How long will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come upon you like a robber, and want like an armed man. Now see, what I know you've typically been taught about this passage is that it's all about work really hard and then you will do well. That's not really what it's about. It's really not the point of the passage. Now, don't get me wrong. That is true. If you work really hard, you're probably not going to find yourself totally impoverished. Probably. Though you may. I'm not making any guarantees here. But if you work really hard, at least you're coming to the table with something, right? And that's what we've been told. We've been told this is about being a hard-working American. But that's not what it's about. Let's keep in mind the context of this passage, going back to the whole neighbor bit, right? Now, without really changing it, we're going to slightly alter it just a little bit as we look at the context. The context is going to your neighbor, right? Verses 1 to 5. Going to your neighbor and asking him to provide what you need, and then you will be indebted to him. And now, Solomon says, when you live like that, when your life is wrapped up in getting somebody else to give you what you need, without working for it yourself, just going to them and being provided for, now, he says, go to the ant, you sluggard. Just look at the ant and figure out how she functions so you can stop functioning the way you are. And the way you're functioning is not just simple laziness. It's not just simple not hard working. This is letting somebody else, almost demanding somebody else to pay your way, to provide your needs, to give what you should be able to get on your own. And now see, what we have to be careful of is we have to be careful to not take this too far. Because to take it too far says, don't ever let somebody else help provide for you. Well, that's just dumb. I mean, really. If nothing else, your employer is providing for you. You're not just conjuring money out of thin air, right? The closest thing to that is farmers who grow their own food from seemingly nothing. And I'm not making a joke. I'm just saying they're beginning to end their whole bit almost not dependent on anybody, except certainly God to send, as Denny told me this rain, to send this week, to send rain but not too much, to send sun but not too much, to send wind but not too much. You know, that whole mentality. They're still absolutely dependent on God. But for the rest of us, for the most of us, we are dependent on somebody to pay us. So to act like we're not dependent is just foolishness. That's one direction that this can be taken. That's one wrong direction that this can be taken. The other direction that's wrong that we're really going to dive into today is the mentality of, okay, if laziness or slothfulness is bad, like the sloth hanging in the tree, right, just there for years, if that's bad, then good must be being as busy as possible. Good must be having my calendar filled with 60, 70, 80 hours worth of events per week. That way I know that I'm not being lazy, right? That's the other direction that this is taken. And that's the typical American perspective. And I'm going to be honest with you. That sounds like I'm not usually honest with you. But nonetheless, I am going to just tell you plainly what I think. What happens is we get this idea that to be good Americans, and we've been taught it from pastors and pulpits and churches, to be a good American is to be busy. And that, again, is foolish. See, you can try to build a life out of crazy busyness, out of over-scheduling, out of doing more than you think you could possibly do, and for a while you can do it. And then you're going to find that it gives you nothing. You want to know how I know that? The same guy who wrote this, Solomon, wrote another book, and you should read it. If you start having a thought that you should be really busy in life, that you're going to gain value out of being really busy, it's going to be fantastic, read the book of Ecclesiastes. And Solomon says, I tried everything. I tried overworking. I tried overplaying. I tried overwomening. I don't know if that's really a word, but you know, it's what he did. I tried overdrinking. I tried overpartying. I tried over everything, and it was absolutely wasteful. Vanity, he says. A chasing after the wind. It's like trying to grab a cloud. It doesn't work. So if you have this idea inside of you that even has been placed there by godly people before you that says, be exceptionally busy, and that's how you don't do this, then I'm going to tell you you're being just as foolish as the guy in this who's being lazy. Because there's got to be some middle ground somewhere. Consider this, if nothing else. God told the Jews to do what? To work 6 days. And on the seventh day, do what? Total rest. Now, just picture that. Picture that for your life. I'm not asking whether you take Sundays off, because I don't, okay? So understand that I know that you don't have to take Sunday off to be pleasing to God. But consider this. God asks 1/7 of the life of the Israelites to be dedicated to not working, to be dedicated to not busying themselves, but to be dedicated to him. 1/7. You thought a tithe was large. That's 1/10. God's asking for more than that out of our lives, of our time devoted to him. I am not saying being busy for him, because that's not what he asks out of them. So there's some middle ground between being overly busy and overly lazy that we have to be able to figure out how to walk. But before we can figure that out, we need to take a look at what Solomon says is intended to be true of this person. What are they to go look at? What are they to consider? What are they to be like in order to be who they're called to be? Go to the ant, oh sluggard. Okay, he's already made two animal references, which are going to play out through this entire thing. The ant and the sluggard. I don't think many of us are really familiar with sluggards. Picture the sloth. Picture the sloth hanging in the tree. That's the same mentality. So you've got an ant and you've got a sloth. Compare the two, Solomon says. Take a look at them. See, the sloth, we already know, does what? Hangs out in a tree. And he eats. And when he's not eating, he's sleeping. And when he's not sleeping, he's eating, right? He doesn't do anything. The ant, on the other hand, let's take a look at this ant and see what our lives are supposed to be like, because work is good. Hard work is good. Overwork is bad. Let's look at the ant. What does he say? What does Solomon write about this ant? Consider her ways and be wise. Consider what she does, the ant, and be wise. She has no chief. She has no ruler. She has no officer. Okay, if you can come up with another authoritative role that the ant could have over her, he's saying she doesn't. He's not saying it's just those three. So if you can come up with like an administrator, he's not saying she's got an administrator over her. He's making a point. She has nobody in charge of her, right? But what does she do? During the summer, she prepares her bread. During the harvest, she gathers her food. See, the thing is, in the summer and in the harvest, there's food galore for these ants. It's simple to get food. It's simple to have food. It's all right there. But in the summer, without a boss telling them what to do, they work diligently to prepare the way for that what they know is coming, which is the winter. I don't know if this is true. I really don't. But I have a sneaking suspicion that most people, Americans, if we didn't have a boss telling us what to do, we would likely not do much. Right? Now, that is not true of everybody. It's really not true of everybody. Now, I am not the picture of perfection in all of this, and we're not even going to get into me too much. But I know that I get my work done, and I don't have a boss watching over my shoulder telling me what to do. Right? I have the elders, and every month we get together, and, well, they never really talk about how many hours I spend doing what. They expect me to accomplish my purpose. The ant's purpose in this case is gathering food, right? So that's one of the distinctives we need to make. He's not just saying, go out and be really busy. He's saying, accomplish what? What you're there to accomplish? The ant is there to accomplish getting food. You're put in your state in life to accomplish something work-wise. I'm put here to accomplish something work-wise. And then what I need to do is organize my life here at the church around accomplishing that. You need to spend your life around work for you, around accomplishing your goal. Now, do not get consumed by the goal, but seek to accomplish it. That's what the ant does. And for most of us, like I said, we either go the route of having to have somebody tell us what to do or almost needing to have somebody tell us not to do. Right? Because some of us, let's just be straightforward, we're Midwesterners. For the most part, overworking is the problem, not underworking. Now, I understand not everybody's like that, but by and large, the problem is that we work too much. By and large, what we do is we tell ourselves implicitly, we just sort of think this, man, that guy must be really valuable and important because I can't get a meeting with him. Look how important he is. He's always busy. When that is not the point here. Let's fast forward about 750 years, maybe 730 years, to the life of Jesus. Jesus is our example of perfection, right? Perfection in life, perfection in action, perfection in thought. What did he do? Multiple times, all right? The Bible tells us that Jesus was in the midst of ministering to people, and he walked away to go be by himself and pray. Case in point, 5,000 people show up at a hill to listen to Jesus. And Jesus says, man, we should feed these people. So he feeds them with virtually no food. Now, if you got fed, if all of Algona, the example we used, was all of Algona getting fed by 5 Happy Meals, if that's what happened, what do you think you would think? Whoa! That is crazy and cool, and I want to see more. Where is this guy? I want to follow him around and see what else he can do. And maybe I'll even trust him. And what does Jesus do? He sends his disciples across the lake at night, and he leaves so nobody knows where he is. He runs away from them. And then when they finally catch up with him, he sends them away. He intentionally makes himself not overly busy, yet I promise you he accomplished his purpose. Sometimes, friends, to accomplish your purpose in life, what God has set you here for, you need to stop doing so stinking much. Because in doing so much, you fail to accomplish the thing you're really here for. Because your job, as important as it is, I don't even care what it is, as important as your job is, your purpose is not your job. My purpose isn't even my job. And I'm a spiritual person, right? My purpose is to help people become like Christ, to share the news of Jesus' death and resurrection, and to use that news to help people's lives get changed from the inside out holistically. You know what? If you're a believer, that's your purpose too. That's your purpose too. And now if you let your job become something that wraps up your entire life because you don't want to be the sluggard, you want to be the ant, then what ends up happening, friends, is you miss your purpose for the sake of your job. That's like going and playing a basketball game and scoring 70 points and having your team lose. If you personally score 70 points and your team loses, it doesn't really matter that you scored 70 points, you failed. Right? And that's frequently what we end up doing. We end up seeking to score the 70 points because that's our job. But we miss our purpose in the midst. I don't want that to happen to you. I don't want that to happen to me. So in order to not let that happen, we need to figure some things out. We need to figure out just a little bit about how to say, you know what? That sounds great, but it's not taking me to my goal. Sounds great to have another job. It sounds great to get a little more. Might even sound great to get a promotion wherever you're at, but it might require so much of you that everything else gets sucked dry because this is elevated to taking everything. It's going to mean looking to the world like you've maybe not succeeded quite as well. You haven't exactly failed, but you haven't exactly succeeded quite as well as everybody thinks you could, or maybe that you should, or at least in everybody's mind what that looks like. And you're going to have to be okay with that. Now, I'm not taking myself out of this. I know what the world, even my pastoral friends, see as success within a ministry. And I guarantee if I do this right, I will not be a success if I have anything to say about it along those terms. See, a success, even within the pastoral field, is having more people come to your church to listen to you speak, to follow what you do. Now, is that bad? Not necessarily. But if my goal in life becomes getting people here so that they can hear what I have to say, so they can follow what I say to do, so that we can become larger, so that it can look like, wow, this guy's really got it all figured out, then I'm letting my job suck me dry and my purpose isn't being fulfilled. Now, like I said, you have different jobs than I do. So you're going to have to figure out in your job what that looks like. But I'll guarantee you could come to a point in no matter what job you've got, even if it's volunteer work, where it sucks everything out of you. And you've got nothing left to push toward the purpose and the end that you were here for. And then, just so you know, just so you really understand, if you fail in putting effort towards your actual main goal and you only put it towards your job, you know what that makes you? In effect, the sloth. In effect, that makes you the sloth, not the ant. Because the ant goes and works diligently toward its end, right? The sloth does nothing toward its end. Its goal, its purpose. Instead, it just gets what it needs for right now. To have enough energy and enough food to stay sleeping in the tree. I don't want that for you. I don't want that for me. So what Solomon writes is we are to go to the ant, consider her ways, see that without somebody telling her every step that she should take, she figures out steps to take to reach the end that she was there for. How long, he says, will you lie there, O sluggard? When will you arise from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. Now we have to understand that. Because sometimes, at least when you first look at that, that says, okay, I shouldn't sleep, I shouldn't rest, I shouldn't fold my hands, right? I should always be busy, I should always be doing something. I need to go. Right? That's what that sounds like. View it more like this, though. Let's view somebody who wakes up from sleeping. Okay? They decide to go to sleep. They sleep through the night. They wake up and they're like, I'm up for 30 minutes. I just need a little rest. And they go take a rest. They wake up again and they just need to sleep a little bit. They go and sleep a little bit more. Now it's 11 o'clock in the morning. Now, their morning is gone and they wake up and they say, man, I've been so busy. I just need to sit here, just fold my hands and chill for a little bit. Okay, this is not saying somebody who needs to take a little break is bad. This is saying you know those people and don't be that person who says, I just need a little break from what I'm trying to do, from my purpose. I need to take a little break. And then when they get that little break, you know what they say again? I just need a little break from accomplishing that. And then they get that next little break. And then I just need another little break. If you do that enough, poverty will overtake you. In the physical, economic world, as well as in the spiritual world. You will be destroyed by laziness. That's laziness. It's this never-ending cycle of needing a little break. Because you will need a break, but there is something redemptive in your life about being willing to say, I am going to press forward and not stop. I need to keep going for just a little longer and train my body how to not say, oh man, you're hungry. Let's just stop everything and get some food. Yeah, you could take a little rest. You're a little tired, so let's just stop everything and go get a rest. When your life is consumed by when is the next time I'm going to eat, when is the next time I'm going to sleep, then your life is consumed wrongly. That's the lazy end. But like I said, you can also be consumed on the other end. And if we get consumed, friends, in just this last moment, if we get consumed by work, if you let your work dictate who you are, if you let your work dictate your value, if you let your work dictate everything about your life, then you are the sloth, doing nothing to accomplish the end that you were put here to accomplish. Doing nothing to accomplish the purpose that God has for you in your life. That is completely unacceptable. So let's be the ant. Let's walk from here for those of us who believe in Jesus as the risen Savior. Let's walk from here and say, you know what? You know what? I don't need to be consumed by all of this over here. I need to be consumed by this over here, accomplishing this purpose. And you know what? I don't need somebody telling me, hey, It's morning. Maybe you should pray. Maybe you should engage with God a little bit. I don't need somebody telling me that. I don't need somebody saying, hey, there's a guy over there who needs to have the gospel shared with him. You should share it with him. I don't need to have somebody telling me, you could be nice to this person right here. I'm just accomplishing those things because I see that they could be done. And I see that they would further the end that I've been put here to further. And if you do that, you'll find more value in life than all the money you can get from your job. You'll find more value in life than everything that you could get from the reputation you could build up. You'll find more value in life than anything else you could do. It will be totally worth it. But just know your bank account won't agree. Let's pray. God, thank you for loving us. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to love you in return. Thank you for giving us the chance to read your word, to see and to hear what it says. God, I ask that you take us from here and show us how to honor your son, how to honor the purpose that you've put us here for. And God, I just pray for each one of us that you give us the strength that we need to accomplish what you've given us to accomplish. Let us, Lord, not be lazy in work. Let us not be lazy in accomplishing our purpose of furthering your kingdom. We love you. It's in your name we pray. Amen.